my smoothie cleanse and my diet.
Hi, Boon Boon. You're so good. Such a good boonie.
Such a good boonie.
Good girl. Hi. Hello. How are you? Welcome to A Smattering of Heresy, a podcast where we snuggle up and have some late night chats about valuing solitude, creating an inner world, being present with nature, art, spirituality, and most of all, how these things come together in healing. I'm Gemma. Avery is out there on the ground looking very sad because Bailey isn't playing with her. Yeah. So, for 2022, I set an intention for the pod. It's kind of embodied in a phrase. Your voice has been missing for too long. My hope is for our heart-to-hearts to give you the encouragement and the tools to feel empowered to use your voice. Because the truth is that your voice is fucking needed. Shall we hop into it? Today, my sweet, sweet dudes, I thought we'd get a little chaotic. Boonie, did you just come in here? Boon Boon. Bailey is in my closet. And it's a neighbor window. Hello. Hello, puppies. Hello.
Oh my goodness, what's happening? Yes, I am trying to record an episode, guys.
Well, listen, I said chaotic and they said we can help. Neighbor window. You good, homie?
Can I have a kiss?
Thank you. That's very nice.
Good girl. All right. Go have fun.
Good girl.
All right.
Yes. Okay, so it has come to my attention that I eat kiwis in a very chaotic manner. And thusly, this episode was born. So we're going to talk about some foods, and then we're going to talk about some chaotic gardening. All right? Cool. So first of all, listen, most of the nutrients... Can you hear that? Oh my goodness. Little cutie butts. Okay, so most of the nutrients for fruit and vegetables is in the skin. they are so funny. Most of the nutrients for fruits and vegetables are in the skin. So I leave the skin on for most things, like especially vegetables. I don't really peel carrots or potatoes or anything like that. I leave the skin on for the nutrients. So anyway, at one point I decided to leave the skin on the kiwi. I ended up liking it a lot because, true, it's fuzzy, but it's fine. It's like, it's whatever. And you don't end up getting kiwi juice on your hands. The kiwi juice always gets into my dry hands and like burns. And so I eat kiwis like apples. And it is apparently very upsetting to others because they're just like, okay, everything, everyone stop whatever you're doing. Gemma, what the fuck is happening right now? I'm just over there like, what? You know? Listen, I am not ashamed and it's fine. Another chaotic food choice is I really prefer, in general, when I'm eating something, if I eat it like in a very tactile way. For example, mangoes. I really am not here for like peeling the mango and cutting it into little bits and then eating the little bits. That's very nice. I don't want to do that. I want to pull the skin off with my fingers and bite directly into the mango. And it's like so great because the juice gets like all over your face and it's like running down your chin. And I understand why that might be off-putting for other people, but I just think it's so much better because like your whole face is up in this mango. And so it's like all these different senses, like smell and feeling, and like there's temperature changing on your cheeks because like the mango's there. And anyway, it's just really nice. Yeah, I much prefer to eat mangoes voraciously. Just get after it. I like soggy cereal, and I'm not sorry about it. I think it's so much fucking better. Most of the time, if I'm eating cereal, I just leave the bowl for a few minutes to let it kind of get soggy, because that's the best part. So I just wait a little bit and let the cereal start to get kind of soggy, and then I eat it. That's how I want it. I also feel that way, actually, about PB&Js. When they've been sitting around for a while and the jelly is starting to soak through the bread, I really like that. Oh, listen, I have two more PB&J related things on this list, so buckle up. We're vegan. So one of them is pretty mild. Growing up, my mom ate her peanut butter and jellies this way, so I did too sometimes. And she would basically just put potato chips inside her peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and it was really good because then it gets really salty and crunchy. And the other thing is that on a road trip last year when I was camping in New Mexico. So camping, you know, you're cooking things.
It's kind of complicated sometimes. And I was
camping in bear country, so that also makes it kind of complicated. And I am vegan, so it's like you can get food, but it's not like, it's not great. Anyway, in the end, what I did and what I often do these days on trips is I just bought like a giant bag of apples and like some oranges and a cucumber, a green pepper, and then peanut butter and bread. And that's like what I lived off. I just munched apples all day and made peanut butter and jelly, or just kind of peanut butter sandwiches. And honestly, it was fine. Like, it was completely fine. But also, I recognize that there was a time in my life I would have found this extremely unsatisfactory. You're like, oh cool, am I gonna eat apples again for the 7th fucking time in a row? Honestly though, the dogs are helping because they're just, you know, really supplying a soundtrack. So, Irish custard is really good and it's really hot. So it's like the consistency of a pudding cup, but it's hot. And it's so good, man. But from an American standpoint, hot pudding would be a very upsetting situation. But it goes in trifle, which is fucking good. And then it also, sometimes you put little vanilla wafer things in there. And that's really, really good too. At work recently, the pump fell apart in the dark caramel sauce. It wasn't sitting like that. We found out immediately you're pumping and then you're not pumping. And so whoever was on bar, like, ran the pump to me. They were like, oh, Gemma, like, this fell out. We need it right now. Yada, yada. And I was like, okay, I'll do it right now. And so I like, thought about it because I was like, man, I really don't want to stick my hand in this vat of caramel. And I was like, well, I can't pour it all over the sink. I'm in the middle of doing dishes. So I was like, you know what? It's fine. I got this. And I stuck my hand in to get the pump out. And listen, it felt amazing. I did not expect that. I thought I was going to hate it. But it felt so good. It was like, I don't know. It's what I imagine like a lava lamp or actual lava would feel like. It was like this forbidden, smushy, little blubby little situation. And it felt great. So I took out the pump and I washed it and cleaned it and put it back together and brought it back out there. That was the fastest way to do it. And then I discovered that that was a really, really delightful feeling. Speaking of which, though, I hate crumbs on my fingers. I really can't be doing with that sensation. Ever since I was a little kid, if I pick up my sandwich or something with my hands and set it down, I like immediately start flicking my fingers. And my dad always used to make fun of me at dinner and be like, really dramatically whenever I would do it. But yeah, I know it's a terrible feeling. I dislike it very much. I'm a very sensory person, as you can tell. the sensory experience makes or breaks it for me on pretty much every situation. Man, if there are any foods you eat chaotically, like maybe you take your sub and you go straight for the middle like a crazy person, yeah, let me know. I'd be very interested to know about that. And the second thing we're going to talk about is chaotic gardening. So I was talking to a friend recently having problems with their plants and wanted advice. Actually, I think this has come up a few times recently. And so that's what we're talking about today. A few different things that go wrong and how we can resolve this situation. So, first of all, let's say you have your little herb garden in your little pots. Despite your best attempts, they end up dying and you didn't throw them out right away. You left them and so now they're starting to dry out and stuff. Okay, just go ahead and clip off all the little leaves and keep them because it's essentially pre-dried herbs, you know? Like your rosemary just dried itself out for you, which is incredibly thoughtful. So you can just take all the good-looking rosemary and leave the ones that look weird. And yeah, sick. You have dried rosemary for the rest of the year. And then, yeah, let's just try again next year. They're annuals anyway, at least in pots. I think rosemary is like, I don't know. The whole annuals thing gets kind of confusing, to be honest, because it changes based off of where you are in the globe and whether it's in the ground or in a pot, so it's kind of vague. But as a general rule, most of those herbs are only going to live for like a year at the most. And then you would have to like get seeds again or whatever. So like I said, that's not literally always the case, but that's the case a lot of the time. So just don't take it too seriously. You did fine. You did your best. And if you haven't thrown the plant out yet, salvage all of the herbs from it, and then you can continue using those throughout the year. Next situation. Your plant is doing really badly and you're not sure if you can save it at this point. What's the move? So I would say it sounds like it's time to propagate that sucker. Instead of just dumping the plant or letting it sputter on for another month or so before it completely dies with its sad little spindly, just accept that that's the end of this particular iteration of this plant. So propagating a lot of the time is pretty straightforward. There's a lot of different types of plants that you can propagate in water. Let's say it's a pothos plant. Those are going to be really easy. So you take your vine and then where the little leaf attaches to the vine is like this little bumpy section and then there's this little horn that comes out of it and that's called the eye. So if you have a look at your pothos, you'll see that. So you want to cut it in between those things. So like you basically, okay, this is really hard to describe, but you're cutting it as to where the horn guy has a little bit of vine either side of him. So you've got your little leaf attached to the vine on the horn guy and a little piece sticking out on either side, and that's perfect. And you want to do that with as many leaves as possible. Like take all of the leaves from the plant that you have left and then throw away what's left. Compost it or like whatever, it's all good. And then you take all of these little cuttings and you put them in a jar of water and you're gonna take the water out and dump it and get fresh water every couple days. And then after a few weeks, they will have grown their own roots and you can repot them and you'll get a brand new pothos plant. It's very similar for pileas. Those plants, a lot of times the leaves are super tiny, so you're not gonna cut for each eye. You could cut like a, you know, like a few inches. But let's say you have 5 really long vines from this sad little pilea and that's all he has left. That's okay. You don't need to do each vine individually. Let's say the vine is like a foot and a half long. You could cut that into 4 or 5 pieces. And so then you end up with 20 to 25 little pieces of pilea that you've stuck in this little jar of water. And so they're going to also root over the course of a few weeks. Same idea for So the common name is called the Wandering Jew plant, and I don't know the history of that plant, homie, and I don't really fucking care. It's just bad call. So I never really refer to it that way. It'll be called that probably in the plant nursery or online. It also can be called purple Zebrina or a tricolor Zebrina or what's that word? It's something like Trandiscontia zebrina. It's something similar to that. But anyway, it's very similar to a pothos, and you're doing the same thing, leaving the leaf stem exactly the same, and then just cutting either side of the eye, so you end up with like a little T. You can also do that with snake plants. If I remember correctly, with the snake plants, it works a little bit better to cut a V into the bottom of each stalk. Regardless, whatever type of plant you have, just look up propagation methods online. And it might be the type of plant where propagating is kind of tricky, but it also might not be. And there's more types of propagating than just water propagating, but that would be a really easy way to do it. And it works for a lot of kinds of plants. But for some of them, maybe it doesn't work that way and it's a little bit more labor intensive. That's okay too. It just kind of depends how much you like your plant. Which is a perfect segue into our next little guy here. Spider mites. Homie, I am so sorry if you have spider mites. Ugh, it's no joke. You'll know you have spider mites because basically you get like these spider webs going on your plant. Like you might have little strings of spider web going from like branch to branch. And then if you get close and look in the curve of the leaf, you might see more. That's pretty much going to be spider mites, pretty much across the board. And they're really hard to get rid of, bro. So it really depends how much you like your plant. If you are very lukewarm about this plant, it's up to you. It might be worth it to call it a day. I got spider mites a few years ago. I brought home a plant from a plant nursery that had spider mites. I was unfamiliar with spider mites at the time, and so I didn't recognize. I thought that the plant was just maybe like a little dusty or, you know, like whatever. Anyway. So it took out a ton of my plants. Spider mites they're intense. They'll kill a lot of your plants before you necessarily know what's happening. And then it's very difficult to get rid of. And there's not a lot that works to kill them. So sometimes it'll say on insect bottles that it kills spider mites. Based on my research, not an expert, I'm an amateur gardener, but based on my research, that's pretty much not going to be the case very much. And it actually ended up being less beneficial because these pest control products that you're using are killing the other pests, which are allowing the spider mites to flourish because there's less competition, basically. Yeah, it's not great. The only thing that helped me, because I had some plants, one plant in particular, I had this gorgeous elephant ear plant that was huge and that I really loved, and he was covered in spider mites. And so I kept that bad boy alive for another 2.5 years without spreading the spider mites to any other plants. And basically how I did that was through showers, which is not a metaphor. I literally picked up this like 40, 50 pound plant and took it, you know, struggled it into the bathroom, set it down in the shower, and then would turn the shower on and had to hand wash every single leaf, both sides, and then would like stagger it back to its spot. And so I do that every couple weeks. And yeah, that is the best way to get rid of spider mites, is to literally wash them off of the plant. So I found the shower to be like a really excellent way to do that. But basically, you gotta really get in there and like really clean the plant. And there's other little deterrents. Some people talk about apple cider vinegar and stuff like that, and okay. But I would just say like, be cautious, because the spray sometimes ends up making it worse. I thought it was a pest I didn't have a name for, and so I had pest control products and I started using them. And then spider mites like all over a ton of plants, just flourishing. The point is, even if you have spider mites, you can definitely deal with that. It's chaos for damn sure, but you can sort it out. I tried to avoid that plant touching other plants, but he wasn't like in a room by himself. He still lived in the same place, and I just tried to pay attention. It got to a point where I wasn't washing him every 2 weeks. It was pretty well managed to where I was giving him a shower like less than that, like maybe once a month. I would just pay attention, and when I started to see little spider lines, he would get a shower. So, it's all good. I wouldn't stress yourself about it too much. A really common pest is fungus gnats, which sound more gross than they are. Basically, they have a life cycle in your soil, and so you can set out like your little strips of paper and stuff, and that will catch them, and that is effective for that part of the life cycle, but there's still going to be quite a lot happening with inside the soil that is going to turn into gnats. You don't need to spend a bunch of money on a ton of stuff. Really, you only need diatomaceous earth. So you want to cut back on watering, because basically what's happening is you're overwatering your plants and there's too much moisture, the decomposing plant matter, and then too much water in the soil. It's just really creating this perfect environment for fungus gnats, and so they're just like, you know, flourishing. So basically you want to let your plants dry out, and when they're starting to dry out, take a fork or something, and it's good to wear a mask, which we all have a ton of actually nowadays. So I haven't had to do this since, you know, since the pandemic. So at the time I was like, where do I get a mask? But yeah, okay. Ah, sad jokes. So you basically are just going to rake your diatomaceous earth into the soil and just try to mix that in pretty well without disturbing your plant's roots. But yeah, you just want to get up in there and mix that through pretty well. And that creates a less good environment. And the larvae and stuff like that are going to really struggle to continue surviving in this inhospitable environment. So the little strips of paper and stuff are fine. You can definitely do that as well. And yeah, I would just really recommend that. My last chaotic thing would be like for mosquitoes. So the last apartment I was living in was really mosquito heavy. It was just in a low part of the city. So the water, I don't know how like water tables work, but it seemed like the soil was always wet and like much more humid than other parts of the city. Point is that we had a ton of mosquitoes all the time. So a couple things. Firstly, you open your door and mosquitoes come in straight away. That's a problem. So I got my little spray bottle and I did water and witch hazel. And then I included a bunch of essential oils from mosquito repelling plants, a bunch of lemongrass oil, and then a little bit of like rosemary, a little bit of basil, a little bit of, you know, just different things like, and I mean, it smelled really, really great. And I would just spray that on both sides of my door frame. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like no mosquitoes, but it was a deterrent that was really helpful that at least let me get in and out of the house without bringing in a ton of mosquitoes with me. You can cut limes in half and you can put cloves inside of them, stab them with cloves. And I found that worked a little bit too. It's not like, no more mosquitoes, problem solved, but it's a deterrent. And in order to get more life out of them, I would kind of just give them a squish with my shoe when I was passing by. And then, you know, after a few days, I would toss those ones and make new ones. If you live in a place where there's not a ton of mosquitoes, then that's awesome. I'm really happy for you. If you live in a place where there are a ton of mosquitoes, then you know the absolute hell demons that they are. So, yeah, any deterrent is worth doing sometimes. Another thing I like to do is sometimes I'll make a little pesticide. The same idea, like I'll do water, witch hazel, and then some other things. It really depends on what type of pest it is. I might do like tea tree oil and rosemary and maybe like lemon juice. It just really depends. If it was aphids, I wouldn't do lemon juice. I would probably do water with like a little bit of Dawn, because I'm pretty sure Dawn, they really don't care for that. Anyway, the point is, I guess, if we have a point, is, you know, like whatever, chaotic, life be chaotic. It be chaotic up in life sometimes, and like it's not the end of the world. Eat your kiwi like an apple if you feel like it, you know, you do your thing. Enjoy your soggy cereal, enjoy your cold pizza, whatever. Chaos happens. And gardening is messy. You know, something that I love, Monty Don says a lot. He always says, there's no such thing as a finished garden. And that's very, very true. So, sometimes your plants die, and like, that's a bummer. But also, you know, you're probably learning a lot throughout that process. That's what it is to be on Earth. You live and you die. And it's kind of an honor to get to experience that with nature in such an intimate way as a garden. And to have the opportunity to care for them and nurture them. And also reevaluate our relationship with the planet and realize that this is not so much me, their benefactor, helping them as it is like a teammate. You know, like me and my garden are like teammates and we're working together. if we're going to have any sort of fruitful situation, we got to work together, because I definitely can't just stomp in there and inform the garden how it's going to be. Like, they're living beings, so they're just like, yeah, I'm probably going to do whatever the fuck I want, but thank you for your input. So, yeah, I think it's a privilege to have a garden. It's a privilege to care for them. And I wouldn't be too hard on yourself. Pests happen. Don't freak out. Well, you know what? Like, feel all your feelings. I'm sorry. I don't mean to shame you. Feel all your feelings. But if you can, just try and keep it in perspective. Pests are completely natural. That's just life. And, you know, you're going to figure it out. And if you lose some plants in that process, yeah, that's a bummer. But that's also not really avoidable. Sometimes it's chaotic. It doesn't make you a failure. It doesn't mean you're a bad gardener. You know, these are limiting narratives that are not really helpful at all. So you're not a bad gardener, you're a gardener. And like, pests happen, rain happens, snowstorms happen, seasons happen, you know, life cycles happen. You know what? It's an ecosystem, baby. We're all working together. So I wouldn't stress about it too much. And that's really all I was gonna talk about today. So thanks for hanging out with me. I am really, really enjoying chatting with you as always. And next time we get together, guys, it's gonna be about celibacy. Ooh, we gonna talk about sex. Ooh! So yeah, I'm excited about that. As always, that's gonna be a couple weeks from now. So I update on Instagram because I know that it's not an exact schedule for episodes. So if you're enjoying the podcast, please look me up on Instagram, Smattering of Heresy, all one word. And on there, I give you a heads up when a new episode is coming, or maybe like some teasers about it. And it's just a great way to connect. If you enjoy my art, I have an Etsy store, and I'm on Patreon too, which is a lot of fun. I do lots of exclusive content and like art discussions, and we talk about books, and there's like a little gardening corner. There's like digital downloads for mindfulness and things like that. So I would love to connect with you in these ways. There's also no pressure. Thanks for hanging out today. I hope you enjoyed it. And I will see you in a couple weeks, and we're going to talk about celibacy, and we're going to talk a lot about having sex with yourself, and it's going to be fucking great. So I will see you then, and hope you have a great week.